the impact of war through words and music. The performance Between War and Here is a collaboration between the musicians of Ensemble Galilee and former NPR war correspondents Ann Garrels and Neil Conan. It is an outgrowth of another project. For 7 years, on Fridays, two members of Ensemble Galilee played their music for wounded soldiers at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Ann Garrels and Neil Conan join us to share their wartime experiences and how they've been changed by them. Ensemble Galilee leader Carolyn Surick will talk about the project, and we'll hear some of the music inspired by the wounded warriors she met at Walter Reed. And we invite veterans to call in and share their stories as well. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. How does war affect us, and what does it mean to have honor and courage in combination with loss and trauma? Two NPR war correspondents and a musician are part of a unique collaboration that explores the themes of war through music, poetry, and memoir. Today we'll talk with them of the impact that war can have on people and how we deal with its lasting effects. Joining me today, Ann Garrels, a former NPR journalist who covered Chechnya, Bosnia, Afghanistan, and other global conflicts. She was one of the few non-embedded journalists who stayed in Baghdad during the Iraq War, which she wrote about in her memoir, Naked in Baghdad. Neil Conan was the longtime host of NPR's Talk of the Nation and was anchor of NPR's live coverage of 9/11 and the invasions in Afghanistan and Iraq. Before that, he covered wars in the Middle East and Northern Ireland. And Carolyn Surick is the founder of the chamber music group Ensemble Galilee and the author of a book of poetry titled Between War and Here. That is also the name of the performance. It was in Blue Hill last night and tonight in Brunswick. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you a veteran? Do you want to share your experience with war and how it's affected you here? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And we're going to start with some music. Carolyn Surick, we'll start with you. Tell us what we just listened to and what this performance is all about.
Well, thanks so much for having us. That was the beginning of a tune called Of Darkness and Light, which is a tune that is in our show tonight. The performance of Between War and Here is this really kind of extraordinary combination of music and text. Some of the stories about Walter Reed and certainly Annie and Neil's memoir can be challenging. I mean, it's very real. And the music, it gives the heart an opportunity to rest. So after you've heard something which can be challenging to hear, then you hear this fully developed piece of music, which is kind of like, and then you can go on. We had no idea when we started that it was going to be this kind of beautiful.
You mentioned Walter Reed, and our audience may not know why you're mentioning this. This whole project started when you began playing music at Walter Reed, correct?
Right, yes. I volunteered to go over there once and ended up being there with my friends Ginger Hildebrand and Sue Richards for every Friday for 7 years.
What an experience.
Yeah. And then we actually also worked down at Fort Belvoir in Virginia, which is where the behavioral health side of Walter Reed ended up going.
Oh, so I want to ask you more about that, but I also want to bring Ann and Neil into the conversation. It is such a privilege to have you in Maine and in the studio with us, and personally could talk to you each for hours and hours and end wanting to hear stories. But the reason you're a part of this project is because you both have extensive coverage extensive experience covering war and being in these horrible, horrible situations. And I was reading how many wars you've covered. You never intended to be a war correspondent.
No, I started actually covering the Soviet Union, a very cold war, and then was kicked out in 82 and ended up in El Salvador. And but that was, you know, I mean, you know, in a way, almost child's play compared to the wars we cover now. I mean, both sides needed us. It was before computers. They needed us to tell their story. And yes, it was dangerous. People got killed, but you had access to both sides in the conflict. By the time I was in Chechnya, computers were there. And they didn't need us anymore, except either dead for the publicity or for money, for ransom. And it's continued to evolve like that since. So yes, the wars got really bad.
And at some point, you tried to stop covering wars.
Well, I did. I stayed in Iraq. Well, I went to Russia in the 90s, getting away from Yugoslavia. I mean, I thought I'd had enough. I arrived just in time for the beginning of Chechnya. But then 9/11 happened, and, you know, it was Afghanistan, Pakistan, and then Iraq. And I stupidly stayed too long. I stayed in Iraq for 8 years.
When you say you stayed too long, what do you mean by that?
I was toast when I left. And I mean, I was writing about the arrogance and ignorance of the Bush administration. And I failed to realize my own arrogance and ignorance. I mean, I thought I was invaluable. And I was necessary. We didn't have much of a bench at NPR in those days. But I mean, I really ended up pretty crazy after 8 years.
Oh.
And quickly thereafter retired and then went back to my passion, Russia.
And she's mentioning Russia, you wrote a book, Putin Country, which is just such a fascinating look at Russia through the eyes of regular people trying to live regular lives in Russia today. But Neil, I'm not leaving you out. I want to get to you in just a moment. But Anne, how did you, I think you probably, this is a story and an experience that soldiers will share, but how did you, when you say you were pretty toast, you were pretty crazy, how did you come back? How did you come back to being yourself?
Therapy. I mean, that was really what did it. And I had a wonderful husband. And I have to say, this project is another step in the right direction. Because Carolyn she sat there at Walter Reed. Can you imagine playing the viola da gamba for a bunch of young, wounded vets? I mean, it's pretty crazy. But she is enormously compassionate and a brilliant musician. And she listened and watched. And the poems that she's created are so reflective of all sorts of parts of the war experience.
She will tell you she's not a journalist, but anybody who's been a journalist knows that listening and watching is about 90% of it, and she did that beautifully and brilliantly and wrote down what she saw and then put it into exquisite language, which we're lucky enough to get to read aloud to wonderful music.
So when you're in the performance, what you are reading are her poems.
Yeah.
And her poems are the words of the soldiers that you met at Walter Reed.
They're stories.
They're stories.
Yeah.
Neil Conan, you, many people may not know, were captured covering war. Tell us that story.
Well, it's not one of glory. It's pretty easy to get captured, turns out. It was at the end of what we now call the First Gulf War, and an old friend of mine and I were running up to Basra, where we were told there was a rebellion underway, and indeed there was. But we ran into an outfit of Iraqi soldiers who had been cut off south of Basra, and they did not know what to do with us, either because we were reporters or we had a wonderful Toyota truck. I was wondered what Chris did with his expense report to the New York Times, you know, Toyota Land Cruiser, one. We were held for a while and then turned over to the Republican Guard. And they were going to drive us to Baghdad. That's a long way if nobody has a map handy. And the next night we were ambushed by Shia rebels. That's how we found the conflict. And so then it's interesting. I say in the memoir that I section that I read in the show, you're being held by the Republican Guard and you're ambushed by Shia rebels. Which side are you rooting for?
And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, do you know who it is that who is who when you're there?
Interestingly, they didn't know. One of the moments as the gunfire rang out, the Iraqi soldiers were running around saying, Askari, Askari, which they were wondering if it was their own army that was ambushing them because Iraq was in a moment of tremendous chaos at the time.
Well, and that's part of it, isn't it? When we read about war, it's so different than when you are inside of it, covering it. It's
indeed,
so much more chaotic, and I have to imagine so much more terrifying.
Much bigger. It's interesting what Annie was saying earlier. I spent a long time, various years in Northern Ireland, and that was gentlemanly by comparison. And indeed, both sides wanted the media to get their side of the story out. And, you know, yes, 10,000 people died in Northern Ireland. Let's not gloss over that. But in terms of danger, you could catch a stray bullet, but nobody was going to take you out. The battles were not so ferocious.
Neil, did you have a difficult transition?
Yes.
To regular life?
Yeah, I did. I had a form of PTSD, and because of the experience. And it took me about 8 years to get around it. And I would have to say two things helped me out, one of which was working with Carolyn, and this was on earlier projects, and the ability to put my head into a different space, which was profoundly helpful. And the other was I was having difficulty, so I ran away and worked in minor league baseball for a little while as a play-by-play announcer.
I didn't know that. I read your bio, and it doesn't say, I know that you're a macadamia nut farmer
I am
now.
A macadamia nut farmer. That's also a little bit different, but yes.
Oh, my goodness. Carolyn, how did you all find each other?
Came to Portland.
To watch the Sea Dogs.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
And how were you involved with the Sea Dogs? Did you just watch a game?
Well, I was doing play-by-play for the Bowie Bay Sox at the time.
Okay, how fun. Carolyn, how did you all connect?
Well, I actually, Ensemble Galilee did a recording project, which was a joint venture between NPR Classics and Dorian, and we recorded at NPR. And then we went to Chicago for the big NPR conference, and I'm in my hotel room in Chicago practicing, and I open the door, and there's like Neil Cohn, and I'm like, hello? And so we met, you know, totally randomly in this hotel in Chicago, and then he then saw Ensemble Galilee playing, and we were corresponding, and I was driving him to the beach because he had a place at the beach and didn't drive. And so then we were like, Neil, would you like to read poetry during a Christmas concert in Annapolis?
And this was such a challenge because Liz Knowles, who's the fiddler who's with us tonight, said, I said, where do I come in? She said, four bars in. I said, when's that?
That's not a typical NPR piece of direction.
11 seconds I could nail, but four bars, I don't know from bars.
And Neil, did you recruit Anne to come into this project?
Yeah. Carolyn asked me, you know, as we started this project, she said, who should we work with? And I said, this project, we should work with Annie.
And it's been amazing, I have to say. Although when Carolyn called me, I mean, I have zero musical talent. And I said, I hope you don't expect me to either play something or sing. God forbid you don't want it. But I just learned so much about music because the music and the musicians are simply extraordinary, as is the text that she wrote. But I've got to say it's a very difficult project to describe because, I mean, it's about wounded vets in many ways. But we actually had a fight about this the other day because, you know, truth, beauty, beauty, truth.
Uh-huh.
What she tells is the truth. It's not glossed over. I mean, it is beautiful, but we had the fight about the word beautiful because it's searing.
Mm.
And, you know, so people come away at the end of the evening sort of going, whoa.
Mm. what are you all hoping? Who are you hoping to reach? What are you hoping they come away with?
I have to answer this one because this is kind of one of the things that I think is one of majorly cool parts of this. In this world that we live in that is so divided, one of the things that's beautiful about this show is that Fox News people love this show and NPR people love this show. So we have people who are veterans, who are military people, who go, I don't know, it's got those NPR people. And I'm like, no, like, this is about veterans. And so they're people who would never expect to be moved by something that they're not sure of. And so we have veterans who come and they love this. We have military families who come and they see their beloveds there. And we have people who are at the opposite end of the political spectrum who come because they love NPR and Neil Conan and Ann Garrels. But what they all get to see and what they all get to experience is something that's about these few people. I mean, there's so few people in America right. serving these days. And so these stories about these men and women and their families are super important. I mean, they're super important that everyone understand that this is going on.
Mm. And the measure of courage and sacrifice that we have exacted from them and that they have willingly put forward and the struggles that they've gone through. This tells a little bit about those qualities of those people, and that's something we all need to know. And boy, those are stories, well, you never run short of those.
We do need to take a quick break. We're talking with Ann Garrels, Neil Conan, and Carolyn Surick. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from InSource Renewables, working to empower Maine workers and communities through solar energy, online at mainesolar.coop.
For many Americans, their political identity is hard to separate from their faith. So how are some Christian voters thinking about 2020?
The party is a big tent, but faith is a piece of that tent. If you don't identify with those voters, then sometimes it's harder to energize those voters.
That's next time on The Takeaways, Politics with Amy Walter from WNYC and PRI.
Tonight at 7 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
There's an election coming up in 2020, perhaps you've heard, an election that will have far-reaching consequences. And in the year ahead, no doubt, you know you'll be listening intently, staying up to date, and understanding better all the important issues involved. A valued service that is public radio can only do what it does because it's supported by listeners, people just like you. And because of the upcoming House impeachment hearings, we've adjusted our schedule, and our fall membership campaign is now getting underway on Tuesday afternoon. So please, do your part, whatever you feel this service is worth in your life. Together, we'll ensure that public radio continues to be an important source for independent, trusted news and content. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about the impacts of war and music helping people deal with it. Joining me, Carolyn Surick. She's a musician and a poet with the chamber music group Ensemble Galilee. She produced the show Between War and Here. Ann Garrels is former NPR war correspondent and author of a memoir as well as a book about Russia. And Neil Conan is also a former NPR war correspondent and executive producer of All Things Considered, who now spends part of his time in Hawaii reporting on Hawaii Public Radio and farming macadamia nuts. I'm grinning not because you're a macadamia nut farmer, Neil, but I'm grinning because it just seems so absurdly wonderful to have all three of you in the studio with me at the same time. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Here's another one of Carolyn Surick's compositions, Lily. How do you compose music that will help people? How do you know what helps people?
Well, actually, I have to say that most of the music that we played on Fridays at Walter Reed and at Fort Belvoir that was not music that we composed. And I can't tell you sort of in the musicological or music therapy world what it is. What we did was there were three of us, the harp, viola da gamba, and Ginger, who played guitar and fiddle. And we would just sit there playing tunes. And essentially, you sort of read how the room feels. And so we actually never played happy music. Like, there was something so wrong about playing sort of major key happy stuff there. So we ended up playing a bunch of Irish music and a bunch of very sort of modal pieces. And that really spoke to people, and it created an environment where they felt incredibly comfortable. And then we ended up recording CDs for them because they have trouble sleeping, because both traumatic brain injuries and post-traumatic stress make it hard to sleep. And so they wanted us to come back at night. And I'm like, yeah, no, we can't do that. So we got everyone to donate everything to create a CD for these guys and gals. And we gave away 1,000 CDs in the first 10 months to wounded warriors and their families. And they kept them in their car and next to their bed and every place, so that whenever they started to feel anxious, they could just put it in and it would just give them a place that they could remember how to feel okay. And actually, I mean, I like really don't know why Irish music or just playing tunes would be helpful to people, but it apparently really, really is.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of miraculous that way.
I want to invite any veteran listening to the program today who would like to, if you'd like, call and share your story and maybe share something that has helped you, a piece of music or something else. And I need to turn to both of you, Anne and Neil. Did music help you all in your coping with, you know, the trauma of covering war?
It sure did, because I was lucky enough, as I needed help, to be working with Ensemble Galilei. And so I got it firsthand. And one of the really great privileges of working on this program, yeah, doing the show is great. Listening to them rehearse is the interesting part. And, you know, the show is good because they don't stop and argue so much. But the rehearsals are what's really interesting. And that's really where I think I benefited the most.
Anne?
Well, same here. I mean, earlier I mentioned that I am not musical. I have learned so much about music, and I can hear it in a way that I never could before. But also, as we choreographed the program and watched the musicians sort of go, well, what about this piece of music between these poems? And then it was like, it sounded like a brilliant idea, but nah, that didn't work. Why didn't it work? It just didn't work. And then they'd come up with another piece. And it was intriguing. Mm. I mean, and totally different than anything I'd ever done before.
I want to ask you all a little bit about covering war. I have very little experience, but in 1997 spent 11 days in Bosnia and Hungary. And I have to tell you that was the most intense and most exhausting experience of my reporting career, and gave me a sense of admiration for people like you who did this for months and years on end, and also a little bit of amazement and wondering how do you do that? How do you live surrounded by such chaos, yet still perpetually try to be finding the most important story of the day, telling it in a real way, getting the logistics of getting that story out to the people who need to hear it? How do you keep yourself going, I guess, is the question.
Well, you just summed it up. There's so many parts to the puzzle, you know, getting the story, getting it out, recording it, writing it. You're busy, and you almost don't have time to worry about other things.
You also said something interesting. You said, how do you keep doing it? For many war correspondents, perhaps too many, the question is, how do you keep from not doing it?
Well, exactly.
Because it is incredibly vivid. You are alive when you're doing that, because your adrenaline is pumping and you're in moments of great moment. And so you'll have learned that one of the ugliest words in the English language, for example, is checkpoint. One of your goals in life, you come to realize later, is to avoid teenagers with automatic weapons. But we all know, sadly, Annie and I both do, people that stayed with it too long.
Well, I
took risk after risk after risk.
I'm a perfect example of that. But there was also, you know, in many instances, Bosnia, Afghanistan, I was alone with a driver or a translator. But in Baghdad, we had an office staff. I mean, we had to have a house, not in the green zone. We were in the red zone. And our staff didn't tell their families who they were working for because it was so loaded, so dangerous. And I felt very responsible to these people. I mean, our day would start. We'd have a meeting. How can we cover a story and stay alive? And, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I had some great producers along the way. But as I said, you know, NPR's bench was very, you know, it was not deep. And there were a lot of people who were sent out who'd never been in war zones before. They were talented, but, you know, they didn't have instincts for it necessarily. They didn't have experience. So that's why I think I ended up staying as long as, well, too long.
I've spoken with soldiers who have come back, and it's very hard for them to deal with how frivolous everything seems back here in the States. Walking into, for example, a big box store, and mm-hmm. there just being so many things to buy, and most of the things seem silly. Did you deal with that, Neil?
To some degree, but it is also that you were asking one of the things, what helped me get out of it. Part of it was getting the job at Talk of the Nation on NPR because, as you I'm sure know, there is a moment of adrenaline about 20 minutes to airtime that resembles something like what we went through and a need to focus clearly for the expanse of time that you are on the radio. And it is an experience that mimics something like what we went through. And so that made it a little easier for me.
We'll go to Peter, who's calling from Cherryfield. Hi, Peter. Thanks for calling in. Peter,
are you there? I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, look, I applaud you folks for taking care of our wounded veterans. I'm a bugler with Honor Guard, and so I've seen PTSD in action. But the saddest of all are our suicide rates among our troops that have come home. I just had to do a funeral just recently for one, an active duty funeral. And I don't know if there's any way for your music to reach out there somehow for suicide prevention or not. But anyway, I applaud what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, Peter, and thank you for playing the bugle at military funerals. It's a wonderful thing to volunteer and do.
You know, actually, on my last trip, I came up a couple of weeks ago to talk about this project. And I was sitting on the plane next to a guy who has a foundation that works with soldiers at risk of suicide, veterans. And we were talking about this thing about whether there was a way to incorporate the music that we've created to bring it into his organization, because this is such an incredibly big, tragic, and terrible situation that we're in right now with soldier suicide.
We'll go to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. I guess I've got two questions. I'm asking you because you're not politicians. Back in 1924, we gave the Kurds nothing, we didn't do it. The French did, French and the English. They gave the Kurds nothing, and they divided the Middle East in an absurdly difficult way. They didn't take account of anybody's religion and their religious differences. And then the second question, back in 1953, the British and us overthrew Mossadegh. And that has had incredible reverberation since then because the Iranians were afraid we were going to reinstall the Shah, which is why they took the people in the embassy. And so what I'm wondering is, do you think it would help, number one, for the Americans to learn that it's really our fault with Iran? And number two, what is the solution to the Middle East? That you can't just run around with all these people not having homelands.
How much time you got, Larry?
A lifetime, but I'm already 75, so.
It's history is incredibly important and no more important that in this part of the world than anywhere else. It is absolutely critical to understanding what's going on. And I would say not just the incidents of 1924, but the incidents of the Iran-Iraq War and the introduction of the United States as a major, as the major military power in the Persian Gulf, and which it has been ever since. You're absolutely right. History is critical to understanding what went wrong, and history is critical to understanding how we can help things go right. I'm not sure we help things greatly by abandoning the Kurds in Syria, but it's going to be a difficult situation. Resolving the Syria issue is going to be critical to the next century. I'm not exaggerating. How is that going to be rebuilt? How are people going to put their lives back together? Who is going to be seen as the Marshall Fund of Syria, and who is going to be seen as the enemy of Syria?
I think the hardest thing for me as a journalist looking back is that, I mean, to the best of my ability, I reported on the reality as I saw it. And then to see that we didn't learn anything from our mistakes or learn very little. And that was incredibly painful.
Thanks for your call, Larry. If you would like to join the conversation, please call us 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater, Curiosity for Life, offering exceptional day school and after school options for toddlers through 8th grade, breakwaterlearning.org, and Downeast Institute, fostering innovation and economic opportunities through marine research and education, downeastinstitute.org.
Every election, millions of eligible voters do not cast ballots. One man says his non-vote is really a vote against a system that keeps putting dishonest politicians in office.
Getting rid of politicians is like getting rid of a bad disease.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, reasons Americans choose not to vote. Plus, how costs would shake out for New England families if the U.S. Congress passed Medicare for All. Please join us.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Mary Louise Kelly from All Things Considered on NPR. When news breaks, you turn to Maine Public Radio and to NPR for the facts. We bring you news that is educational, not sensational. You count on us to dive deeply into the issues, and we count on you to help fund that kind of reporting. Help grow the news service that keeps your community informed. You can visit mainepublic.org and donate now. And thanks.
Our Let's Grow Together membership is scheduled to start Tuesday at 12 noon. You can contribute right now at mainepublic.org or by calling 800-866-1475. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about war, its effects on people, from war correspondents to soldiers, and how music can help. Joining me, two former NPR war correspondents, Ann Garrels and Neil Conan, and musician and poet Carolyn Surick with the Ensemble Galilee. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Angela, who's calling from Burnham. Hi, Angela. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Angela Einstein, and I am a teammate on A. Einstein Universe, which is a nonprofit here in Central Maine that helps people who suffer with post-traumatic stress. I am 24 years alcohol-free, and I connect with other people who are sick and suffering and bothered with trauma that affects their daily lives, so they become disabled from it for a variety of reasons. There is a number, a suicide prevention hotline number, that is actually a song and a video that has 172,000 dislikes because it affects us adversely. And this is a national hotline number. That is why I'm calling today, is because we have been muted as trauma survivors, not getting the help we need, which is to be in therapy and getting the help we need in every way to keep families together rather than drawing them apart.
Thank you very much for the call, Angela. And you've said something profound, and that is PTSD, we think of it as something concrete, something that could be cured, not so easy. And PTSD as a source of problems goes all the way through, yes, self-medication, yes, drug abuse, yes, alcohol abuse, yes, abusing yourself mentally because you're torturing yourself for the sins, your sins. So yes, find a way to get some help.
Yeah, and many people, we use the phrase PTSD because that's what people recognize. But many experts say it shouldn't have the D because there's no disorder going on. This is regular human reaction. What we will and naturally feel after trauma. Angela, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Kenneth calling from Penobscot. Hi, Kenneth. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, first, thank you to all the speakers today, and especially to Annie Garrels, whom I know. And she may recognize my voice. I wanted to ask whether or not either of them are aware of any counterparts that they may have inside of Iraq itself, given the devastation that occurred during the war, you know, and the casualties amongst Iraqi civilians. And secondly, are there any performances that are going to be made in the Maine area? Southern Maine or up in Bangor. Thanks.
Kenneth, before you go, I'm going to ask you to clarify your question. You want to know about their counterparts in Iraq.
Similar musical performance. I've heard episodically about musicians playing in Iraq in certain spots, whatever, but nothing along the lines of a sort of a performance poetry reading that tries to get people to deal with all the, all the problems that their society's been going through, which is again in a violent period with all the demonstrations. I think over 250 people killed in the last couple of weeks in the streets of Baghdad and others.
Yeah, Ken, I certainly don't know of foreigners going in because it's just too dangerous and touring, and I don't know what Iraqis are doing because of the sectarian violence and the sectarian splits. I think it's also probably too dangerous to do much publicly. So, as you know, I haven't been in Baghdad in a few years. But yes, and in answer to your question about our performances, we're going to be in Brunswick tonight. Carolyn, where are we going to be?
We'll be at First Parish in Brunswick, the Congregational Church at 7 o'clock.
Good seats, still available.
Yeah.
You do that very well, Neil Conan. Kenneth, thank you so much for your call. And Barbara, an email. I had the privilege of attending last night's program in Blue Hill. The poems and music were powerful and deeply moving. This is a program not to miss. So thank you, Barbara, for that. We'll go to Harpswell and Scott. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to compliment you not only on the show, but also there's a lot of services out there that I'd like to make people aware of. The one I'm interested in today is it's called QL Plus, and it's a national organization that's actually looking for challengers, and they define a challenger as being someone who's a first responder or a veteran who is disabled. And what they do is they pair up engineering schools across the country with challengers who need a specific adaptive device built for them. And so I'm interested in kind of putting the word out that they're looking for people who are veterans that are disabled and want specialized adaptive equipment. And they put together the need for the challenger, and they design a device, and they help these people to get a higher quality of life.
So these would be things like prosthetics or you know, ability, some device to help them shift a car or something like that.
Well, in this particular case that I'm going to see a person this weekend, she's in Caribou. She needed a device to help her with her wheelchair on her motorcycle. So the engineering team designed a package that would allow her to get her her wheelchair attached to the motorcycle. Another device that they built.
Cool.
Yeah, really good stuff. Her name is Tammy, and she's in Caribou. There's also devices that have been built for that challenger for having her be able to creep underneath the equipment that she wants to use. So if she wants to use her snowmobile or her truck, she can have a specific creeper that meets her particular need to do what they want to do.
So if people are interested in accessing this, they go to QL Plus?
That's right. QL Plus is out there on the web. And in fact, one of the staff members is a veteran from Fort Fairfield, Maine.
Wow.
Cool.
Aroostook County. Scott, thanks for calling and letting us know about this. What a wonderful organization, and so many wonderful organizations in Maine and nationally helping veterans. I want to take one step back because there are a couple important things we haven't talked about, and before the hour's out, I want to make sure that we do. Neil, what are you doing these days other than farming macadamia nuts?
Well, I do some work for Hawaii Public Radio, but I also work on an occasional podcast series called Truth, Politics, and Power. And we have archives at truthpoliticsandpower.org, and you can see what the kind of things we do there. It's mostly about political history and how we did a series with Heather Cox Richardson at Boston College and a historian about how the United States got through some of the same problems we're going through now earlier in our history and what lessons, if any, we can derive from how we got out of it the last time. And so are those applicable today? And because obviously various reasons can't do breaking news, so we're trying to do history and how it illuminates our present.
All right. And Carolyn, I know that one of the other members of Ensemble Galilei is performing in Portland next week.
Yes, next Wednesday. We have an incredibly talented fiddler, Liz Knowles, and she lives in Portland now. When we first met, she lived in New York and then Chicago. Now she's here, and she has a show next Wednesday night, a solo show at Blue, and she's just incredible.
Do not miss this. Go see Liz Knowles.
Yeah, and because you're not just listening to her, but watching her. It's electric.
We'll go to Tom, who's calling from Biddeford. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Yes, I'm a Vietnam vet. I just refused to seek therapy for years, but I am now in a couple different groups through the VA and dealing with some PTSD. And I was in a group this morning, actually, but anyway, I think this is wonderful to have a program like this now just before Veterans Day, because I know there are many other veterans out there who, you know, haven't sought care or treatment. And, you know, I worry about the ones, you know, who've fallen through the cracks.
Vietnam veterans, now you're talking my age group, Tom. And it's people who, as young men and women, thought they were invulnerable and kept that denial through so many years. And yeah, we're all vulnerable. We all need help.
Tom, can I ask you,
yes,
how did you decide to seek help finally?
For many years, my job had good health care. And until I retired, I didn't even join the VA. But I realized I needed to avail myself of, you know, the benefits of being a veteran. And so through just getting connected to that, I found, you know, therapy. After I got my first intake interview, I asked about, you know, counseling, and they connected me to a wonderful network of counseling and therapists and activities. And so that's helped me to kind of confront, you know, a lot of the stuff that I buried. And a lot of the people that I served with have gone through the same thing. We denied, you know, any association with the Vietnam War. When we came home, it was the last thing that you wanted to tell anybody was that you'd served in Vietnam, because the country was didn't want to hear it.
Tom, it's interesting because I did any number of historical projects about the Second World War, the so-called Good War, as Studs Terkel called it. But those guys did not want to talk about their experiences either. They were extremely closed-mouthed, and I particularly remember I was recording a bunch of guys who had been on the Bataan Death March and later on the hell ships to Japan and then in prison camps in Japan. And when one of their wives came in with coffee, they immediately closed down until she left the room.
And, Tom, I so appreciate you calling into this program today and picking up the phone and doing it. My understanding is that so many people of your generation, you know, sort of used work as a way to focus and put off thinking about what they'd been through. And then as people retire, they have time and they're alone with their thoughts. Was that your experience?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to travel in Europe when I got out in 1969, and I just, you know, didn't feel any connection to what was going on in the country at that time. So I left and lived out of the States for more than 10 years. Finally, just because my family still was here, I've come back and you know, kind of reintegrated and had a very productive and positive experience from doing that, because I definitely was in denial for many years.
Good to have you back, Tom.
Well, thank you, Neil. And it's a great program. Thank you for doing this. And it's very timely as well.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. We're going to go to one more Tom. Tom calling from Freeport. Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I was so interested to hear the correspondents talk about the writing of writing war stories. And I wondered if any of you would talk a little bit about the ways in which the performance brings together different ways of storytelling, that is through music and through poetry and through the memoir pieces. Thank you.
Carolyn?
I think that one of the things that we sort of started to do was to stop calling the book that I wrote poetry, because it really is stories and people are put off by poetry. And I think that when Annie and Neil have their memoir in the program, it's incredibly compelling and it's incredibly beautiful. And I think that the way that my stories about our friends at Walter Reed and their experiences as war correspondents fit together makes it so it's something that you can really hear. It's not something you have to be afraid of. It's not something that you have to go, oh, that's them and that's not me. It's something that speaks to everyone.
Well, that is our last word for this hour. We want to leave a little more time for some music. Thank you all for being here. What a pleasure to meet all three of you. Ann Garrels, former NPR journalist and author who has covered multiple global conflicts. Neil Conan, longtime host of NPR's Talk of the Nation, also covered several wars. And Carolyn Surik, a poet and founder of the chamber music group Ensemble Galilee. She produced the show Between War and Here. It is being performed at 7 p.m. tonight in Brunswick at the First Parish Congregational Church. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. And the last piece we'll hear is Wayfaring Stranger by Ensemble Galilee.